This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, we're celebrating pop culture that you can't accuse of being subtle. Our series is called Big, Bombastic, Brassy, and Trashy. But for today's show, we'd better throw in the words fast and cheap because it's about B-movies. We start with the king of the Bs, producer and director Roger Corman. He's churned them out in nearly every genre, westerns, monster movies, science fiction, and gangster films. He also directed Youth in Revolt movies like The Wild Angels, starring Peter Fonda, who we'll hear from in a couple of minutes, as the leader of the Hell's Angels. The movie helped establish Fonda's career and helped inspire the film Easy Rider. When I spoke with Corman in 1990, he told the story behind Wild Angels.
There was a lot of talk about the Hell's Angels at that time, and I remember in, it was either Time or Newsweek magazine, there was an article on them, and at the top of the page was a picture of a Hell's Angels funeral. It took place in some woods, and they were carrying the coffin, but the members were riding their bikes. And the visual power of that photograph really impressed me. And I was having lunch with Jim Nicholson and Sam Arkoff, who ran American International, and we were talking about various ideas for a film that we might do together, and it kind of came up between all of us that we all thought the Hell's Angels would be a good subject, so we agreed that we would do a film about the Hell's Angels. I wanted the Hell's Angels not to be the nemesis, the heavies. I wanted them to be the leads in the picture. So I developed with Chuck Griffith my own script, which eventually became The Wild Angels. And for a little while there, I and Chuck were hanging out with the angels, going to their parties and so forth. And the picture became a loose compendium of stories they told us about things that they had done.
So tell me what you were like when you were hanging out at Hell's Angels parties.
I was not quite one of the angels. I made a point of bringing the beer and possibly helping to bring some marijuana and one thing and others. And Chuck and I were reasonably well accepted, but we were never quite with them. I remember at one time I had spent a lot of the evening sitting drinking beer and talking with the old lady that is the girlfriend of the president of the chapter of the Hell's Angels. And Chuck came over to me, and he said, "You're spending too much time talking to that girl. The leader of the angels has been watching you. He doesn't like it in any way whatsoever." And I realized for a little while I had forgotten what kind of party I was at and where I was. So I said goodbye to her and went over and talked to some guys about some bikes.
Now, you cast some actual Hell's Angels as extras in the movie, right?
Yes, we had members of the Venice and San Bernardino chapters of the Hell's Angels.
Did they give you any trouble?
No, they didn't really give me trouble. I was very careful as to how I was going to handle them. I thought about it, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to order them around, and that's not my style as a director anyway. On the other hand, I can't appear to be too weak because they'll start to push me around. So I determined that the thing to do was try to be as objective and unemotional as I could, and simply to say, all right, fellas, the bikes start here. You're going to ride up to here, you're going to turn around that corner, and you're going to pull up in front of that bar over there, and you pull out, and you run into the bar. And I would try to say it that way so it was clear what I wanted, but that I wasn't trying to force them to do anything. And I think they understood and appreciated that, and by and large, we got along pretty well.
Did you pay them well?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I don't remember the exact amounts of money, but it was interesting. We worked out the payment. They got a certain amount of money per day for each angel, and then they got a little bit less than their personal fee to bring their bikes, and then they got a little bit less than the bikes for bringing their women. So this was their scale of values.
Peter Fonda starred in Wild Angels as like the head of the biker gang. He later starred with Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider. But in Wild Angels, there's something very innocent and vulnerable looking about him in spite of the way that he's cast. Did you realize that at the time?
I knew that, and it was a little bit of a problem because I wanted Peter in the film. He was a good actor, he had the right persona, but he's a very tall, thin person, and he wasn't really as tough or as tough-looking as the angels. For that reason, I had him wear a couple of layers of clothing throughout the film in order to build up a little bulk. So I was aware of that, but I did what I could.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's B-Movie Day in our series Big, Bombastic, Brassy, and Trashy. Let's get back to the King of the Bees, Roger Corman. He directed many movies in the 50s and 60s, including Bucket of Blood, Little Shop of Horrors, The Pit and the Pendulum, and The Wasp Woman. In the 70s, his company New World Pictures turned out genre films and movies that tried to cash in on the success of mainstream blockbusters. Corman's Piranha followed Jaws. After Star Wars, Corman made Battle Beyond the Stars. He's still producing and distributing movies through his company Concord New Horizons. Many now famous people got their start working on Corman's low-budget films, people like Martin Scorsese, John Sayles, Francis Ford Coppola, and Robert De Niro. Jack Nicholson got his start playing a masochistic dental patient in Little Shop of Horrors. Let's start with a scene.
You know, most people don't like to go to the dentist, but I rather enjoy it myself, don't you? I mean, there's a real feeling of growth, of progress when that old drill goes in. I mean, I'd almost rather go to the dentist than anywhere, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Now, no Novocaine. It dulls the senses.
This is gonna hurt you more than it is me.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
A lot of incredible actors and directors got started working with you. I'd like to hear the stories behind how you came across some of them. Why don't we start with Jack Nicholson, who I think a lot of people remember his role in Little Shop of Horrors as the masochistic dental patient.
Right.
How did he come across your attention?
Well, I met Jack in an acting class given by Jeff Corey, and I'd been directing maybe 4, 5, 6 pictures when I felt I really had to learn more about acting and actors. So I enrolled in the acting class and met Jack there. From the beginning, I was impressed with his ability. He was and is a very dedicated actor who delves deeply into a character, does a great deal of research, and then is able to bring a great quality of personal humor and insight to the character, and is willing to take chances to go into areas where other actors might pull back. They might prefer to play it safe.
You are, I think, the undisputed king of the cheap, fast movie. Let's talk about some of the ways you developed to make movies that were fast and cheap. I think one of the things you've done a lot is shoot two movies back to back.
Yes. I first started doing that when we would go on location. The cost of taking a movie crew, even a small movie crew such as I would normally work with, the cost of taking that crew on location is fairly high. So if I would go to a location and do two pictures in the location, I could amortize the cost over two pictures. The same thing when shooting in Hollywood, if you're going to build fairly elaborate sets, I would try to find, whenever I could, a second picture that could take advantage of those sets. I would then rearrange the flats a little bit, repaint them so that they would look a little bit different for the second picture, but essentially I could use the elements twice.
Name two movies that were shot back-to-back like this.
All right. I did actually three pictures once in Puerto Rico when I took a company there. We did Battle of Blood Island, a World War II picture, and then I directed The Last Woman on Earth, which was written by Bob Town and actually starred Bob under the name Edward Wayne as an actor because he hadn't finished the script, and I didn't have the money to take him to Puerto Rico to finish the script and take an actor also. And I said, Bob, you're playing the second lead in the film. And then when we were there and things were going well, I called Chuck Griffith and gave him the idea for a comedy horror science fiction film to be called Creature from the Haunted Sea, and we threw in the third picture as well.
So, okay, now casting Robert Towne, the screenwriter, as one of the stars of the movie, I guess that's another example of saving money.
Yes, but I knew that Bob was and is a good actor. He'd been in the same acting class I'd been in with Jack Nicholson and a number of others, and I knew he was a talented actor.
You've worked in many different genres over the years, and one of the genres that you describe yourself as having created is the black humor horror film, and included in that category would be Little Shop of Horrors and Bucket of Blood. Why did you decide to combine horror and comedy, and did you wonder if the horror audience would be interested in seeing a movie that mocked itself in some ways.
I got the idea of combining horror with humor at a sneak preview of one of my films when a sequence, which was designed as a horror sequence, worked very well, and the audience screamed, really screamed, very loudly. And immediately thereafter, they laughed, and then they got back into the film. And I thought, what they've done is they've reacted the way I wanted, they've screamed at the right moment, and then they realized that they'd been led into it, and they laughed in an almost appreciative way at what I'd done and what their reaction to it was. And I thought there's really a connection there between horror and humor. And then I read a book called Beyond Laughter by a psychiatrist, I think his name was Dr. Grotjohn, in Beverly Hills, in which he talked about the relationship between horror and humor. And I went to see him, as a matter of fact, paid him $100 for 1 hour to talk with him. And he told me some of his theories. And I decided to do a film that would be a comedy horror film, and that was Bucket of Blood, which I shot in 5 days, starring Dick Miller, written by Chuck Griffith. And the film was rather successful and very funny. It did just what I wanted it to do. It got the screams at the right points, and it got a lot of laughter in between. I was very pleased with it, so I tried another one, which was Little Shop of Horrors, which was more slanted towards the humor and less towards the horror. The horror was there, but it was really almost comic horror. And that picture had a rather strange history. It was very wild, rather original, and I shot it in only 2 days and a night, and I expected that I should either have a great success with something like this or a complete failure. It was so audacious a thing to do. To my somewhat disappointment, I had a moderate success. But what happened over a period of time, the picture became well known and it kept playing. Every year I would get additional rental and royalty checks. It would play at midnight screenings on college campuses, things like that. So over a period of years, it did become a rather big success.
You did around 8 Edgar Allan Poe movies, all of which starred Vincent Price. Did you give him his start?
No.
In horror?
No. Vincent had done one horror film before he worked with me. I think it was the Murders in the Wax Museum or something like that in 3D that was successful. And, of course, before that, he'd been a well-known and established Hollywood and Broadway actor. But I think it was probably in the Poe pictures that he got his greatest acclaim, starting with The Fall of the House of Usher and then going to The Pit and the Pendulum all the way through, finally, to the last two films we did in England, Mask of the Red Death and The Tomb of Ligeia.
Your Poe movies seem, in a way, very deeply felt. And I guess I'm thinking particularly here of the Tomb of Ligeia. I mean, some of the movies you made, you were turning them out, let's face it, right? And some of them, you must have felt really deeply. I don't know what the question is, but I guess I'd like to hear about the difference for you between doing a movie that was deeply felt and one that was intended for another audience in a drive-in, and you didn't much care about the subject matter.
I'd always admired the work of Edgar Allan Poe very much, and I've read everything he's ever written. And I was very much desirous of doing The Fall of the House of Usher, and I was very pleased that the film had turned out well, and I did take the work very seriously. I had certain theories at that time, one of which is I thought that, or I believe that there are certain movements or times for change in human civilization, and I think that art and science go together more closely than people think. And I think in the 19th century, the concept of the unconscious mind was coming forward, and I felt just as Freud was moving there in a scientific manner, I think that Edgar Allan Poe was doing the same thing in an artistic way. So I tried to combine some of the theories of Freud with the works of Poe in order to bring them together on film as a synthesis.